You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
So there's a couple episodes of podcasts that are kind of same across every single podcast there is in the market, right? So the draft is one. I would say free agency is another. And the other one is the trade deadline, right, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I feel like every single recognizable podcast has done some sort of trade deadline episode. Are we going to do something different? Is that what you're preemptively leading us towards?
No, we're going to be like every other dang podcast out there and have our trade deadline episode today, obviously. Duh.
Why can't we be special, or are we just being lazy, or is it? It's just because the trade deadline. I think it's just such. There's always good content, and I think everyone always has different takes. Like, there's no podcast that ever has the same take, and I feel like we'll probably have different takes than, you know, other podcasts that you'll listen to.
You mean it's great hashtag content?
Yes, I mean at least we can take a break from thinking about 2026 Olympics, I guess.
Okay, so I have a couple of trades I want to talk about. So the first one, I was like, I don't know where to start with this. It's that I wish Ansel was here. Because if Ansel was here, he could tell us more about this Jacob Zboril and a third for Andrew Peak trade. Like, at this point, we've heard it before from Boston's organization. Like, they just kind of want – DeBrusque has asked to leave, and they're tired of the Sinishin, Zboril, DeBrusque – for Shabbat, Barzal, and Connor, like, jokes, right? Like, at this point, it's been kind of, you know, memed to death, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad look.
So, like, I'm not surprised they're trying to get rid of them as best as they can, but let's be honest here, Zboril is probably going to be a tweener. And if you're a team like Boston, who is trying to be a cup contender, you got to shore up that depth, right? Depth is where playoffs where depth matters the most, right? So you're going to be really wanting to build up that depth, and that's what Andrew Peak is, right? Like, I've heard a couple other rumors out there, you know, for example, like a Toronto would have been good for him, but let's go to Boston. And, I mean, that's like a solid deal, right? Like, I mean, it's just nothing fancy. You know, we're going to go to the fancy deals later, but this is a low under-the-radar deal that I really like.
Well, my question with this deal was that, like, I know, like, you said Zboril's a tweener, but doesn't tweener also just equal depth? Like, I'm surprised that, you know, Zboril is in their system already, knows their system, has played significant amount of games for them. I'm just surprised that Boston decided to bring in a guy like Andrew Peak, who, if I am not mistaken, has also been a healthy scratch for a team like Columbus. So, like, why is Boston bringing in a guy who's basically identical to Zboril, but maybe it's a right-handed shot, maybe?
So Zboril has a very good contract, too, right? He's got, what, like 2.75 or something like that for the next 2 years after this year?
Right? That's so Andrew Peak.
Andrew Peak, right? Sorry, it's a really good deal, right? 2.75 next 2 years. And, I mean, like, to be honest with you, like, I got scratched some games, but when I'm looking to talk about depth, I'm looking at third-line depth. Right? I'm not looking for AHL depth. I want NHL players.
Yeah, I mean, I think Peak played well last season. I mean, like, he kind of got thrown into the fire there a little bit with Columbus. And this season, you know, you bring in guys like Severson, and, you know, he kind of fell down the depth chart, so I can kind of see him. Why he got scratched, but like the one thing I could see why Boston does this trade is because they've got quite a few UFAs going into next season on their back end. Like, I want to say Matt Grizzlick and Derek Forbert are both UFAs. So, I mean, like, if Peak works out for you, like, I mean, it's still quite a bit of money to pay for a third pairing guy at like 2.75 a year, but he's young enough that, like, I feel like if he fits into the system, which, you know, he might, like, he's a, you know, gritty, rugged player who can, you know, lay the body out. Like, I think if he works out, it's a good deal. And, you know, with some term, like, that's not bad. Because, like, realistically, if you look at this deadline, not a lot of players with term actually move. So I wonder if Boston was kind of doing some off-season shopping already and bringing in Peak here and didn't really pay too much, I would say.
I'm sorry, 2.75 is expensive for a third pairing defenseman. How much are you paying your third pairing defenseman?
I would say under two would be my, like, that's anything over two for a third pairing defenseman is probably a bit too much. Especially, like, if you're looking at Boston too, who's on your right side? McAvoy and Carlo. Do you really need to spend 2.75 on your third pairing right-handed defenseman? Probably not.
On your Montreal Canadiens, who is the third pairing defenseman?
Jonathan Kovacevic.
And?
I think right now it's either Jaden Struble or Jordan Harris.
You know what? Having an entry-level contract doesn't count. But I feel like for most, like, cup contender teams, maybe don't use, like, the Canadiens, like, 2.75, I don't think is that ridiculous, right? Like, it's, I think it's average. I'll use Avalanche as another cup contender. Third pairing defenseman is what? Sean Walker and Jack Johnson?
Yeah, sure.
2.65 and 7.75. I don't think that's too outrageous. If you're just making like four, then I'd be like, okay, yeah, third pairing, that's kind of out there. But, you know, like if you take one more cup contender, we'll do exercise one more time. Vegas was unfair. Give me a team that you'd like as a cup contender.
Florida.
Florida, that's a good one. Florida, their third pairing would be, I don't know, Kulikov and Ekman-Larsson?
Yep.
2.25 and 1 million. Like, I think 2.75 for one new defenseman is not that bad. It's reasonable.
It's not awful. I mean, it's only one player on your salary cap, so, like, I mean, you can make savings elsewhere, like, if you got guys on entry deals, right? But, like, if you're looking just solely in a vacuum, a third-pairing defenseman costing 2.75 is a little bit much. But, I mean, you know, I think he can play better in Boston than he's played in Columbus, so we'll just wait and see what improvements he makes with the Bruins.
Yeah, okay, so going back to your team, right, because the LA Kings, God forbid we do anything here, finally got rid of that three-goalie situation going on there, right? Like, they traded Jake Allen to the Devils for a conditional third base. That could be a second, depends on how many games played. And I think if I heard correctly, Jake Allen on TSN was just seemed kind of relieved to be with the trade, because it's really hard to have three goalies, right? At the end of the day, like, your practice and game time, like, you can't really get in the rhythm. You know, it's hard to get in the rhythm for a 1A, 1B, but now you get a 1C as well. I could see it being kind of relieving to kind of be out of that situation there. I gotta say, the Canadians did really well this deadline with the Monahan and now Jake Allen. Like, it's just, it's not a guy they really want to keep anyways. And they got a potential second round pick for him. Like, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I mean, like, the three-goalie system isn't helpful, right? Like, if you think about practice, right, you only have two nets, so where's your third goalie goal, right? So, like, thankfully, in Montreal, the practice facility, like, there's a rink nearby, so, like, your third goalie can, you know, play with others. But, like you said, it's a rotation, and, I mean, it was kind of clear that Montembeau was going to be the number one, and I think Jake Allen was there as a mentor, and I think it got to the point where it was, like, for Montreal, they're like, are we going to extract enough trade value or asset value from Jake Allen at this trade deadline now or in the offseason? And like you said, a third for Jake Allen, who, you know, isn't putting up great numbers. You know, he's been in the NHL a while, so, you know, he has that experience. But a third is pretty good. And like you said, it could turn into a second, though. I mean, like, I think the stipulations is like he plays 40-plus games next season, which, I mean, that's probably not very likely. So, I mean, I'll take a third for Jake Allen, and also just solidifies your goalie tandem, at least currently. I mean, they've got a good goalie coming up in the minor systems, or like in NCAA and Jacob Fowler. But I'm happy with this trade for Montreal. The Devils, I don't know what they're doing.
I mean, it kind of feels like they're selling, right? Like, Toffoli went to Winnipeg for a 2025th second and a 2024 third as well. Like, it feels like they're selling.
But then why would you bring in a goalie for a third and with term, right? Like, the whole trade deadline was like, oh, will Markstrom go to the Devils? And, you know, it's been on and off, on and off. And it sounded like they're going to revisit in the summer. But then why are you going to bring in a goalie at this deadline with term, like, who signed into next season? Like, you can't go in with the tandem of Markstrom and Allen. Like, do you? Or, well, actually, right now, the current tandem is also, like, not, it's, they also traded for another goalie, right? I'm pretty sure. So, like, to me, New Jersey doesn't make sense. Like, I think they sold Toffoli for okay price, but they just confused me, this deadline.
Yeah, I could see the confusion there. It feels like a little bit like they didn't want to put Nico Daws in a situation where he couldn't play as much. So they, you know, got a guy like Jake Allen and who's the other goalie? Kaapo Kähkönen to play some games. And then at the same time, you're right. It feels a little bit like a retool, right? It just seems kind of like all over the place. I wonder how much Dougie Hamilton being on LTIR, Cal Foote and Mikey McLeod being off the team for, you know, unknown amount of times for other reasons, that kind of put a screw in their plans a little bit, right? Like, just being like, oh, like, we kind of have to re-figure out how we want to approach this, you know what I mean?
I'd probably say Dougie Hamilton's absence is on another level compared to
Mike. Yes, they're not the same. I cannot stress that enough. Yes, they're not the same level of absence.
And also, like, yeah, like, I think they started off well, and then they kind of start tumbling down the standings. Like, they were in a playoff spot in the beginning of the season. I think they know they have a good team, but it's just, they couldn't get goaltending. They really couldn't, like, they just couldn't get themselves back on track, and it cost Lindy Ruff's job. It cost their goalies a lot of confidence, and I agree, maybe they're just protecting Nico Daws and Akira Schmid to, you know, go play in the minors at least, you know, get some, like, game time. Don't feel like you have to make every single save, just, you know, learn and develop. And then maybe next season, you know, if they do bring in Jacob Markstrom, maybe they'll flip Jake Allen, or I don't know, maybe they're going to have to trade one of those young goaltenders to Calgary to make that trade, right? So I think with New Jersey, it was kind of like a last-minute pivot because it sounded like they thought that they could also get Markstrom and then go for the playoffs. But now we see them trading to Foley going going to Winnipeg, right? So, yeah, like, it was kind of a last-minute pivot. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if New Jersey jumps back into playoff contention next season. But this season's kind of been a letdown. And, you know, I think they did okay. I felt like they probably could have gotten a first, which, you know, I mean, Winnipeg didn't really have many firsts to give away, but I thought they could have gotten a better return from Winnipeg.
I mean, at the same time, right? Like, a 2025th second and a 2024 third isn't bad. Right? It's two picks there. You know, Winnipeg gets a depth piece that I think that team really struggles. They have a lot of very high-end talent, and then after that, it does drop off quite a bit. Talent to fully kind of bridges in between that, like a Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele, and then in between that versus a little bit of kind of that Cole Perfetti role, right? Kind of Gabe Vilardi role, but then in between them and let's say, I don't know, Nemestnikov type of deal, right? Kind of just in between a bit better. And like I said, right, that's the depth you're looking for, and maybe this is a bit more of a high-end depth versus, let's say, like an Andrew Peak, right? It's a bit better. Going back a little bit, are the Winnipeg Jets all in this year? They don't have a first, second, or third. They have a Montreal second this year. But are they going all in this year?
I mean, if you look at their team, like, I think they are. Like, I think they saw that how much the West was, the arms race in the West, they kind of felt like they were pressured. But I think they also recognized, like, they're also one of those teams that are making other teams make moves to be under level, right? Like, Hellebuck's having a hell of a season. their entire team. Like, I know you said, like, oh, there's a big gap between, like, someone from, like, Gabe Vilardi, Perfetti to, like, a Nemestikov. But then now you look at their depth chart. Like, that forward 12, like, that's a pretty deep, like, that's as deep of a top 12 as we've seen in years, right? Like, Alex Iafallo, your former king, is playing fourth line minutes.
He's had a rough year, but yeah.
I know, but, like, him on the fourth line, you're more than willing to take that. Isn't Perfetti playing fourth line minutes too? Like, I think the depth chart's so off because they've got such a good third line that they don't want to break it up. But because they added in guys like Sean Monahan and bringing in Tyler Foley, like, if they had an injury anywhere in their lineup, I feel like they'd be prepared. So I would agree, like, they're all in. I don't know if they have enough star power per se. Like, Morrissey is having a great year, but compared to last year, a bit different. Connor, Scheifele, great players, but again, like, they don't have that. I would say they don't have a top 20 talent. And I think that might be the thing that hurts them the most when playoffs, where star power really comes to show. Like, depth is great, but you need that star to take over the game. So I think what Winnipeg is hoping to do is that they hope that they have enough depth to cover for the fact that they don't have that top 20 NHL guy.
They don't have a top 20 skater, but I'd say you probably have a top 5 goalie.
I could argue top 3, but yes. Like, I mean, goalie is going to save you series, but at the same time, they can't make every single save, right? He's not going to get, Hellebuck's not going to get you shut out for 16 games in a row for you to win the Stanley Cup.
But I would say he probably can steal you one game a series if he really needs to.
Oh, yeah, like, I wouldn't even put it past him. Like, he will steal at least one series, right? Where they might be, like, slightly overmatched, but he just wins the series for them.
That's fair. I mean, not every team can just go all out, like, whatever Vegas is doing, right? Like, every year, I don't know how Vegas does it. I mean, if you're the NHL, yeah, you definitely, this is what you want every expansion team to look like, right? Go all in, build up that fan base a lot. And, you know, that, it's great. But, oh my gosh, like, that team is, like, this year, you know, if they traded away their first round pick this year, they would have had a sixth and 2 sevenths in the draft this year.
Wasn't there a team recently, too, that also just decided to trade every single pick except, like, a sixth and a, was that Tampa, maybe? I don't know.
Like, yeah, I think something like that, yeah. Like, I would be surprised, but, like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get how these trades work, right? Like, San Jose traded Thomas Hertl, so I don't have to worry about him, I thought, right? But no, like, he goes to Vegas, so as a Kings fan, I still have to worry about him. And retain 17%, a 2025th and a 2027th third for David Enstrom and a 2025th first. I don't get it. I saw the deal and I was like, oh, like that seems like a okay kind of deal. It's not terrible if you're rebuilding, if you're Vegas. Sorry, if you're San Jose, you get a first, you get a pretty good prospect, and you got 2 third-round picks. That's solid. No, but how did San Jose have to give up 2 third-round picks too? I don't, like, that's the part that I don't understand. Like, it just seems like San Jose was going to sell at any price possible. Like, Enstrom's a good prospect, don't get me wrong, but he's going to need time to develop. And, how does this work in the IR as well? This is another conversation I know people are having. How does it work on the IR when there's so much over the cap? Like, this team, if you include the LTIR and IR together, is like almost $27 million just in IR and LTIR.
Well, I mean, oh yeah, like, I think what we're seeing a lot more now is you're not seeing teams just trade away picks. They're looking to, like, trade down. So I don't know if Vegas was the first team to do this, but I've noticed, like, a lot of teams are, like, I think, I want to say there was that Mrazek deal with Toronto and Chicago where, like, Toronto, like, basically just traded down. Instead of, like, just giving up an asset, they're like, okay, we're just going to take a slightly worse asset or depreciate one of their assets to get rid of Mrazek. Yeah, like, I think we all thought the 2/3 were going from Vegas to San Jose, not the other way around. But it almost sounded like if you're Mike Greer, you're kind of like, I want my team to be as crappy as possible. I'll take a good return, but I'm not going to be looking for a maximum return and try to outweigh that, because every minute that Hurdle is playing for me probably makes my team slightly better and makes my odds for the first overall pick slightly worse over the next couple of years, right? So it still seems like a very low price for Thomas Hurdle. He is hurt, so I wonder if that factored in a little bit. Like, but it shouldn't factor in that much. Like, Hurdle is probably set, like, a really good top six center. It's just, and he's got Tur, which I get is maybe a little bit scary, but I don't know. It's a good deal, I think, for Vegas. And San Jose, you know, they made their goal of getting worse, and they brought in a couple of assets back for it. So it's hard to hate the deal, I think, with the whole cap situation too. Like, Hurdle's supposed to come back, but like, guys like Mark Stone's probably not coming back until the playoffs. I'm gonna make a guess and say Alec Martinez is probably not making it back until the playoffs too. Like, they've just been able to find the loopholes in the CBA and use them to, you know, maximum efficiency.
Like, for sure, he's not going to play until the playoffs, right? Like, at some point, we've got to figure out how to get past this loophole. Sorry, because like, these players are always going to appear at the first game of the playoffs. And like, I am actually A-okay to play. And like, everyone knows what's going on, right? Like, let's be honest here. And I don't know, maybe you kind of have a central place for physicals to happen to be like, look, he is magically better now. Or like, as part of that, you have to be able to, I don't know, clear 2 weeks before. And if they're not clear like a week before the games, then, you know, then they can't play the playoffs from that, right? Like, they need to figure out something. Or maybe they go, oh, if you are out on this day on the season, maybe there's like 5 games left in the playoffs. In the regular season, then you can't play the first two rounds in the playoffs. You know, because this is going to be ridiculous, right? They're going to have, what, 17, 18 million from Hurdle and Stone come off the LTIR the first game of the playoffs. Let's be honest here.
Yeah, I just worry when you play with, like, health issues, that's always a little tricky, right? Because just because a doctor clears them to play doesn't necessarily mean the player is ready to play, right? Like, if it's obvious that, if someone said they sprained their ankle March 1st, yeah, and then you go on LTIR, and then they say, oh, I'm not ready to play until April 20th, that's a little bit sketchy, right? Because a sprained ankle does not take that long to heal. But when you're talking about more serious stuff, right, like you're talking about like Hurdle, right? He went in for a surgery. That rehab time is dependent on how he feels, right? Like, you can't really put 100% set rehab time on him, right? Because you do the rehab, but then you also have to get the conditioning and the skating and like getting back to game time, like, or game shape, right? So that's another aspect. With Mark Stone, a ruptured spleen doesn't really have a timeline. So you can kind of fudge maybe the numbers a little bit, but I don't think teams are necessarily going too crazy in a sense, like, they're going to hold players back, because I know, like, you know, players are going to want to do what's best for the team, but at the same time, they love hockey. They're going to play hockey if they can play hockey, right? I don't think guys are necessarily being like, oh, I'm going to sit out the entire season and just watch from my couch and not support my teammates, right? Like, I think it's a very gray area, but I do think there's going to be changes so that using the LTIR to circumvent the cap or to increase your cap space on, like, too crazily is going to be a little bit different. Like, maybe it's going to be you're going to have a cap for the playoffs or something.
Yeah, they got to figure something out. I don't know, but we're just looking at, you know, how Vegas with their capologist, that guy needs a raise because somehow they're able to fit in Hanifin too. Like, I don't get it. How do they fit in Hanifin? Like, that, okay, you gotta like assume like Vegas is probably the favorite, right, for the playoffs.
Oh yeah, like, you bring in a top pairing defenseman and like a pretty good, technically could be like a top pairing center, or sorry, a top line center. Yeah, you are probably a favorite.
Like, they brought in Hanifin from Calgary for a first, right? 2026 first, a conditional 2025 third, and the 2026 first round pick is if they traded their 2025 before the deadline, which they did, right, for Hurdle. And then the third round pick becomes a second round pick if Golden Knights win the playoffs. Like, yeah, like they gave up next year, the years after first. They just keep doing it. I don't know how they keep being able to do this, man. They just go all in every year. It's like they're approaching every year like they're about to get folded.
Well, I mean, if you have a team that can win the cup, you should go for it. And I think Vegas is a clear example. Also, like, I think the fact that first season made them taste victory, even though they lost in the cup final, but it made them recognize, like, hey, we can be a contender right now. We're going to go for it every single year. The Hanifin trade, I think, threw a lot of people off because I think a lot of people were saying, like, hey, like, he probably wants to look for an extension, and almost sounded like Tampa was just going to be the front runner. But then all of a sudden, we're like, oh, why did Vegas need Hanifin? Don't they have, like, Pietrangelo and Theodore? But Vegas was just like, hey, we need more. We want more defensemen, which is never a bad thing. I feel like, you know, if we're looking at this Hanifin deal, the fact that there's still no extension probably signifies that he's more of a rental. And then when you look at the price that Vegas plays in, then it kind of is, Vegas did kind of pay quite a bit for Hanifin.
In my head, at least, and I have always been wrong, you know, let's be honest here. I don't know what they can do with Vegas. But if he feels like a rental, right? It's such a low cap hit, 1.2375, sorry. It's such a weird number there. Like, they just kind of snuck him in as close as possible. I think he's just a short-term rental guy. Like, I don't think they can fit him in long-term, but this is a team that has consistently surprised me.
Well, I was kind of hoping that, because they got Hanifin like a day before the trade deadline. I was like, would Vegas try to retain half his salary and trade Hanifin for like a top line winger? Because they're probably more in need of a winger, right? So I was like, could like Hanifin be on someone's cap page at like, what, 600K or something? Like, that would be hilarious. But in the end, Vegas didn't do that. They're kind of going all in. It does signify to me, not the Hanifin deal, but the Hurdle deal kind of signifies to me that one or both of Marchessault and Stevenson are not coming back next season, which again is kind of shitty because those are two very key parts of your team. But I mean, if you're here to win, you got to go for it. And you know, once you've won, if people don't want to re-sign with you at price, you know, you move on to your next candidates and try to build a better team next season, right? So that's kind of what the sense I'm getting in Vegas right now.
Oh, man, that team is crazy. And you know what team they remind me of the most?
Who?
They remind me a lot of the Lightning. They would just wear the Lightning, and now they're going to end up, like, you know what I mean? They're the trailing of what the Lightning were a couple years ago.
Like, in terms of, like, going for it every single year, or is, like, just having a really good team?
Going for it every year, and then to a point where the trades get kind of smaller and smaller.
I kind of get it, but at the same time, like, did Tampa go big game fishing to the point that Vegas is doing? Like, I can't remember Tampa making a huge trade deadline acquisition. Like, maybe you could say Brandon Hagel, but that's not, like, a name brand addition, right? Like, this is Thomas Hurdle. This is, like, Noah Hanifin. This is, like these are big names. Like, these aren't just, like, small depth pieces that they're adding. Like, Tampa was doing, like, they were, that when Tampa was bringing these guys, they were, like, third-line guys. Vegas is trying to get second and top-pairing guys.
You know what? If this was 5 years ago, this trade would have been huge, I guess. The trade for Matt Dumba, Arizona sent Matt Dumba on a 2025 seventh for a Tampa Bay fifth. Like, 5 years ago, that would have been like a, that's a crazy kind of trade, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, but also, Matt Dumba 5 years ago is a lot different than Matt Dumba presently.
Honestly, I didn't notice. Do you know how bad Dumba has been this year. Like, sorry to cut you off there, but $3.9 million for that. Like, have you seen how bad it's been?
I know his numbers aren't great. I also know that he signed very late in the offseason. And I know he was just using this as a rebound year. So, like, I think he's just not in the right situation anymore, right? Like, when he was in Minnesota, in the beginning, he was doing well because he was in a good situation. But then, as time went on, he was expected more to kind of be this defensive guy, like, you know, being like a shutdown guy, which really wasn't what he was. And then even going to, like, Arizona, like, he wasn't their top offensive guy, and he was kind of relied on to play more defensively, and I think his numbers suffered for it. It all kind of depends on what Tampa does with him. Like, what situation are you going to put him in? Are you going to make him play third pairing minutes? Or are you going to see maybe like a Hedman-Dumba combination, which I could see as being, you know, not too bad.
I mean, if Hedman-Dumba works for Dumba, like, that could be huge. But, like, 10 points so far this season is rough. And he's played one game for the Tampa Bay Lightning so far. 0 goals, 0 assists, but he got in a fight.
I think Dumba is, I don't know, also, if you look at those 10 points, right, like, I'm guessing they're all even strength. I'm guessing he had no power play time. I'm guessing his minutes are way down. Like, he's probably playing shutdown. Like, if you probably look at his, like, I don't know, his offensive zone start percentage is probably was one of the lowest on Arizona. Like, to me, I think, like, if you look at Tampa, like, what are their pairings going to be? Like, I don't think you're going to go with Hedman, Darren Radish as your top pairing. Like, I feel like you want to try out Dumba there. When Sergachev comes back, you go Sergachev, Chernak. And then your third pairing can be, I don't even know who they have left. Like, I can't even remember who they have. Do they have, like, a Zach Bogosian or something? I don't know who, like, whoever the third pairing is. Like, I think, to me, Tampa has to put Dumba in a good situation, and they will win this deal easily. But if they expect him to be a shutdown defensive guy, it's not going to do great fits for them.
So, Jeffrey does have a point there. So, if you look at Matt Dumba's stats this year, 0 points on the power play or shorthanded, 4 goals, 6 assists, all as part of even strength. And then if you look at his offensive and defensive zone splits, this year it's 33% offensive, 67% defense. And if the one game he's played is going to be any indication, he's still going to be a shutdown guy, or they're going to try to be a shutdown guy. He's gotten 10% offensive zone, 90% defensive zone starts. And the number's gonna even out a little bit better, as he plays more, but it sounds like they're just gonna be using him as a shutdown guy, right?
Like, who is he being partnered up right now with, Tampa is my question. Do you have the pairings up for Tampa Bay in their last game?
1 second, please. We are currently trying to take a look here. Let's see if I understand this correctly. Is it Darren Radish? Does that sound like that'd be possible?
Two right shots is rare, but I wouldn't be surprised, I would say. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, I look at the Dumba trade. It could work out. It might not. I mean, if you're looking at Tampa in general as well, like, they're definitely not a contender, I would say, this year. Again, it's hard to say that when you've seen how well they've played in so many years. But again, to me, like, I don't know if I can, like, you can clearly see that during the deadline, like, this wasn't a team that thought, like, oh, we are going to be the top team in the East, or even the top team in the Atlantic division, right? Like, we're going to be a team that's probably going to be, you know, playoff, we're going to be in the playoffs, but we're not going to be, like, the number one team to beat.
So, yes, I see it's Darren Radish or Hayden Fleury. That's who he's been paired with. And then Hayden Fleury shoots left.
Yeah, so Hayden Fleury would probably be their third-line pairing right now. But, like, I mean, like, with Chernak coming back, I think that's going to... I'm sorry, Sergachev, when he comes back, I think it'd be a little bit different. Yeah, I mean, like, they played decent minutes, like, that first game. Like if you look at their even strength, Dumba, Fleury played the most minutes, then it was Hedman, Radish. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think when you have Sergachev, Chernak back together, you can put a shutdown pairing instead of having to use a Fleury-Dumba pairing.
So, staying in Florida, this one was one of the more interesting deals I've had this year. So, Ottawa sent Tarasenko to Florida for a 2024th and a 2025 third. So this one's kind of weird because I thought he'd be worth more than that, especially the Senators retaining 50% too. I'm interested because then Tarasenko only wanted to waive to Florida. It's actually like a really good deal for Florida. Like, this is exactly what Florida needs. I think just more scoring. And if a guy wants to be there, like, power to him, right? And for all me complaining about Vegas being like, oh, they only have a first, a sixth, and a seventh, the Panthers have a third, two fifths, and a sixth. So it's not much better anyways. I really like the deal for Florida. Like, I think, hey, if it's depth that you're looking for, this is amazing depth. And if you're a Panthers fan, you're super excited for this because you've seen him play two games, and he has two goals and assists in those two games. He's got 3 points. Like, if he's motivated to do well, ooh, this is a scary team.
I mean, I think you're forgetting the fact that Tarasenko has a no-trade clause, right? So, like, if you're Ottawa, you really couldn't find the best deal if you only had one other team to negotiate with, right? Like, if you're Florida, you know, they're going to sell Tarasenko, right? Like, what's the point of keeping him on a team that's not going to make the playoffs? Like, it's just a lost asset. You need to get something back for him. So, of course, the deal for Florida is great. I think the most important thing always is, like, when you're bringing in a guy at the deadline, fit is so important. And the fact that, like you said, the early returns on Tarasenko looks good. He's playing top-line minutes. You know, it could be good. I mean, it's still very, very small sample size, so it's hard to say, you know, whether this is going to be the true Tarasenko. But, like you said, a motivated Tarasenko, playing on a top line, playing with good players, winning culture, you're in Florida and not in Ottawa. Big difference in, you know, lifestyle. I think this, like you said, it's a good move for Florida.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's that move, and then there's the move that, okay, so let's be honest here, we're not going through every trade, right? We're just going through trades that seem interesting to me. This trade was the most interesting trade for me in terms of the most respect I had for our team. So Buffalo sent their captain, Kyle Kaposa, to Florida for a seventh, with the option of making a fifth if Florida wins the cup. Hey, man, you want to give your captain a chance to win the cup, right? There's not much into this trade, but I just want to say, like, this is a respect. Respect. Like, you know what? Like, give him a chance. He's not going to win it in Buffalo, so give him a chance to win a cup.
And it is the same thing with Eric Johnson. I mean, mind you, Johnson's won a cup. But, like, yeah, I agree. Like, you know, you would have got – the only way you could get more respect is if you traded Kyle Pozo for future considerations. Right, like that's
seventh. It's good enough. You know, you got to get a reasonable return as well. So you got to get some sort of return. The seventh isn't helping the team directly. You know what I mean?
You don't want a conditional seventh.
No, I have no problem with that. You know, respect. But can we talk about this trade as well? Now I'm talking about Buffalo. Now I'm in the Buffalo mindset. This came out of nowhere, right? Like, no leaks, just like the Hurdle trade. No leaks at all. Buffalo sending Mittelstadt to Colorado for Bowen Byram. Like, I love that trade for both of them. Buffalo gets a scary defense, right? Power, Dahlin, and Byram for the future. That's disgusting. That is amazing three defense right there. Colorado needs a middle line center. Gets them with Casey Mittelstadt. I love that trade. Like, it's a true hockey trade, win-win trade. Love it.
Now, do you think this could end up being like a Taylor Hall, Adam Larson trade? Like, I always find it's hard when you're trading a forward for a defenseman because in the end, someone clearly wins. And it's oftentimes the team that gets the forward.
I think as we've learned to value defensemen a bit better with advanced analytics, it is easier to consider.
Like, I know we're all going to say, okay, he got Dali, first overall pick. Power, first overall pick. Byram, fourth overall pick. My question still is, as scary as that is, Bowen Byram's not on the level of Owen Power or Rasmus Dahlin, right? Like, I he's not there yet. So until he proves that, this trade's really based on potential for Byram, right? Like, this is Buffalo taking a shot at adding a defenseman. I'm curious how they're going to be able to play all three of those guys, because I think all three of them deserve top 4 minutes. But I don't know. Like, when I was looking at this trade, my first thought, or even before the trade happened, I was thinking, would Colorado trade like a Sam Girard to open up time for Bowen Byram? Because, you know, Sam Girard's pretty good numbers, decent cap hit, young, signed for some decent term. I think he went on PA though, so I don't know if that maybe changed anything, but like, Byram's kind of out of left field because, again, fourth overall pick, is they don't get traded often.
I mean, so I guess sometimes we do get hung up on the whole figuring out, oh, you know, where did they get drafted and everything, but at the same time, it's like, whatever, you know, it's about what you do after, right? So I'm okay with that, but I do love a nice hockey trade. Could I see it turning out to be a situation where it's like, oh, yeah, so, like, what, like, is there a clear winner? There probably will be a clear winner at some point, but right now, it just seems like it's a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, and if we look at the Colorado perspective, right, so they basically gave up Johansson, like, not talk about their little deals later, but, like, they basically gave up Johansson and Byram and brought in Sean Walker and Casey Mittelstadt, which, like, we're not talking about picks and all the other assets, but in terms of, like, what you're actually icing, like, putting out on the ice, they did make an upgrade, right? Like, they are a better team, I think, with Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker versus having a Johansson and a Byron, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they also, I think, they added Jakob Trenin as well. So they, you know, added even more depth down the middle. But, like, I look at this team, I'm like, are they as big of a contender as they were when they did win the Cup? I think they still fall short.
That's fair. Speaking of contenders, though, is Carolina a sneaky contender?
My goodness. I thought when you had that pause, I thought you were going to say LA Kings.
Like, oh, no. They are
at the trade deadline?
No, because the team is perfect, okay?
All right. Well, Carolina, they made moves, but, I mean, like, which move do you want to talk about first, though? That's the question.
We can start with the small one. We'll build up to the larger one.
All right, so Gensel is an injured player, and, you know, bringing in injured players aren't great. But, I mean, Gensel is, you know, if they need goal scoring, you got goal scoring. You got them from a, you know, division rival, which is also really nice. And the fact that you didn't pay much of a price for him is, you know, not bad. Like, you gave away pieces, but nothing major. So I like the deal for Carolina. I wonder where he slots in, but also you just have to wonder how much time will he take to get used to playing in Carolina, right? Like, how much time is he going to take to get fit in? Like, after coming off an injury, will he be ready in time for the playoffs? Like, and where is Carolina going to finish in the standings? So it's a good deal, but I think it's hard to say because with Gensel being injured, you just don't know where he's going to, like, line up on that team and whether he fits the system. So it'll be interesting to see what happened with Gensel.
I love when I mentioned that it was like let's start with the smaller deal. You start with the Gensel deal. How is that the smaller deal? But okay, Gensel and Ty Smith for Michael Bunting, Ville Koivunen, Vasily Ponomarev, and Cruz Lucius in a conditional first and fifth round draft, right? We'll left the Carolina side first. They look good. Like, Carolina's always been a defense-first team, right? Kind of like the Predators. And hey, sometimes you need to bring that forward. And so I like the fact that they got in, you know, a good forward who, let's be honest here, we weren't sure if he was going to re-sign next year, right? And they still got in good value in Ty Smith. I personally really like Ty Smith as a player. I think he's a really good player. Underrated type player. So I like it. Like, that team has quietly gotten better and better. And that Gensel deal is a big bang, right? It's a big bang for that team. And then we look at what they gave up. This is where it gets kind of weird for me, right? Like, the Pittsburgh Penguins don't tear it down. But at the same time, they keep guys like Letang and Crosby. And, like, what is the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? The Pittsburgh Penguins are kind of like the New Jersey Devils. Like, what are they, right? And if you heard what Crosby was mentioning, it just sounded like he doesn't even know where they are. And I don't know, this seems confusing. The pieces they got back, of course, Kyle Dubas loves his Michael Bunting. Ville Koivunen is actually very interesting because it seems like he can be heading towards a breakout season. He is having a breakout season. He's sixth in the Finnish league right now in scoring. Seems like a solid prospect, but you know, it is a question mark, right? It is the Finnish league. But he's a young player, you know what I mean? So it's interesting. Ponomarev seems to be bubbling towards an NHL role, which seems like apparently he's going to be third, fourth line, like a bottom six type of guy. And then Cruz Lucius is a question mark. He's leading scoring for the Wisconsin team. He's the younger brother of Jets prospect Chaz Lucius. But how well does he come, right? I think he's more of a question mark, you know, lottery ticket type of team more than anything. But I don't know, like, this Pittsburgh Penguins team just reminds me a little bit of, like, Red Wings near the end of the playoff streak. Like, you're not really sure what they're trying to do. I don't know exactly what this team is, right? A little bit of rebuilding, a little bit of not rebuilding. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the end, what they did was that they took an asset that they weren't going to be able to re-sign, and they got not a comparable player, but they got someone that they can play this season plus next season. And they got some lottery tickets, which either supplements their prospect group, or they could use as further like trade assets. I think the one thing we all question is the fact that you probably had the top player, well, between Hanifin and him, you had the top available player on the market, and you couldn't get a bona fide asset back. I think that's the thing that you're probably worried about with Pittsburgh right now.
If you're Kyle Dubas, though, Michael Bunting is a bona fide asset back.
Yeah, whatever. But, I mean, let's talk about that bigger deal. Kuznetsov going to Carolina. Why does Carolina always seem to have cap space? Like, they took on Patrick Marleau and were able to buy him out. Now they bring in, you know, Kuznetsov, who is retained. But still, like, it was kind of a surprise. Like, I know he just needed out, but is Raleigh, North Carolina, going to be the place where he's going to rediscover his love of hockey?
See, I don't know. This is where I found really interesting, right? Like, clearly it was a buyer's market, right? The Capitals said, we're going to get rid of him, you know, he's not coming back. And somehow they're still able to pick up a player who, you know, has had some issues. And still get a third. I thought he was going to go for significantly less, I'll be honest with you.
Well, with that cap hit, but I mean, the fact that he's half retained, I think helped a lot. But again, I think as much as that, like you said, it's a buyer's market, I think Kuznetsov market was not that great. But I think Carolina is always...
That's what I'm saying though, right? Kuznetsov market's not that great, and he's only got 17 points this season. He still somehow was able to be worth a third. That's what I'm trying to say. I agree with you.
But you look at the track record. I think if you had Kuznetsov, the player, versus Kuznetsov, the stats, I think a third is more than reasonable. If you're looking at, you think Kuznetsov's going to be more the player than the stats.
That's fair. I don't know. We'll have to see with this one. This one is a big question mark for me. I'm not exactly sure on this one. But, okay, I got to run. But I want, really quickly, I don't need an explanation, your winner, top winner and top loser from the trade deadline. Go.
My top loser is the LA Kings because they stood pat and did not create any excitement. I wished to see a trade for the Kings, but they stood pat and realized that they're no longer a contender because they didn't feel like they could add anything to make their team better. Top winner. Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know. This is quick. I'm going to say Florida because I think they're probably one of the top teams in the NHL, and they made some adds and they've got depth. They're a good team. They really didn't need to add, but they're a good team. And I think they have a chance to go back to the finals again. So I'm going to give this trade deadline to the Florida Panthers.
My winner is the Golden Knights. I hate it. But my loser is go off the board. I'm going to say the Pittsburgh Penguins because, like you said, they got some good assets, but they pissed off their franchise icon and Sidney Crosby and confused them to figure out what the direction of the team is. It's never a good thing to annoy your team leader and your franchise icon like that. So, I had a run, but I appreciate it. Jeffrey, we'll chat in 2 weeks. And before that, find us on Twitter at BOP, sorry, on X at BOP_POD. And then we'll talk in 2 weeks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.